Thank the Lord for everyone who's here this morning. I've got a song on my mind, too, today. I'm not going to sing it. It's written by John Bava. It kind of amazed me how he's able to write a gentle song, kind of a flowing melody, and yet it has cleverly woven into it profound message, solemn and weighty message. And I've had it in my files for some time. Came back across it the other day. Kind of got it on my mind. Ricky Van Shelton sang it. So I made contact with Sister Kendra and asked her if she could prepare to sing it this morning. Would you help us out with that, please? And if you know the song, care to sing along with her, by all means, be free.
Heaven is a city built by jewels rare. Its beauty is a splendor yet untold. If you neglect salvation, you'll never enter in. You'll never ever walk those streets of gold. So don't overlook salvation while living here in sin. Someday it may be too late to pray. Someday when you need him, he may not let you in. How awful if he should turn you away. Sometimes we get discouraged while we walk this weary way. But Jesus said he'd every burden bear. So take him all your troubles when it seems all hope is gone. Just trust him when you go to him in prayer. Jesus said, be ready, for you know not when the hour. He may come at morning, night, or noon. So keep your eyes upon him and your soul filled with his power. For you know he is surely coming soon. So don't overlook salvation while living here in sin. Someday it may be too late to pray. Someday when you need him, he may not let you in. How awful if he should turn you away. How awful if he should turn you away.
Well, after all, isn't that the reason why we're here this morning? It's too big a chance to take. Life is so busy. Does it go faster today than it used to? Seems like it. When I was a boy, I remember raising corn. We had a tractor. When we were cultivating it the first time in the spring, we put the tractor in low gear, had cultivators, and it had shields on either side of the row. And you spend all day long just going back and forth. And I kind of enjoyed that. I don't know much of anything in my life you can do that with anymore. How is it with you? I don't have any days that the phone doesn't ring and there's text messages and half a dozen problems to solve all at once, and sometimes more than that. I suppose my mother didn't have the kind of time that I did, because she had children to raise and their demands are constant. But still, it seems to me that there's more busyness. in life than there used to be. And they're distracting things. I learned that when I hit my thumb with a hammer. It stops what I was thinking about on everything else. I just think about my thumb for a little while. And things that affect our minds are like that too. They stop you from what you were doing and make you concentrate on the immediate circumstance and problem of whatever it is that you're dealing with. And it's easy, if we're not careful, to push spiritual things a little bit into the background. Most people have in mind that someday they're going to be a little more spiritual than they are now. That's kind of an awful chance to take. There's no guarantee that any of us are going to have very much more time than we do today. So John Bevan's message in his little song is, among all the busy things that we're doing with our lives, don't overlook salvation. That's the most important thing of all. And you know, after all, it isn't the situation as it seems, that the other world is ethereal, distant, unseen. It's this world that's short. It's this world that is passing. That one is eternal. This is just a dressing room down here to get ready for heaven. There's no more important thing we have to do with our souls than think about our eternal salvation. So don't overlook salvation. Don't get too busy with everyday events and with distractions and affairs and things that happen to us. I thought particularly about this last verse. Said Jesus said, be ready. You know not when the hour. He may come at morning, noon, or night. So keep your eyes upon him. Well, his way of saying it was to keep your lamps trimmed and burning. He told us a story about what happened to some folks who didn't. And there again, the Lord's message was gentle. He didn't really shake them over the pit like he did in some other places. But he said the door was shut and they couldn't get in. I don't want that door shut in my face. I want to be ready to, when the time comes. Song reminded me of one of David's psalms. I don't know how people calculate this. It's been so long ago, but my reference material said he was 67 years old when David wrote this psalm. And by that time, you've heard the story. He'd faced a lion. He'd faced a bear. He'd faced Goliath. He'd faced Saul. He'd had his experience with Bathsheba. He had a child that died. He'd had his son rise up in insurrection against him and try to take the kingdom away from him. He was an experienced man of the world, and he wrote it from the perspective of all that he'd learned about life and looking back on it, weighing out the times when he thought his might be over just any moment now, and the times that he'd had when people were crowning him, singing to him and rejoicing, looking at his own failures and the failures of others. He wrote the 18th Psalm, and it contains this verse toward the end of the psalm. I was also upright before him, and I kept myself from mine iniquity. So he didn't overlook his salvation. He said, I was upright before him. When Saul was lying there vulnerable, asleep, I could have slipped over and cut his throat. Instead, I just cut a little piece off his garment and took it back with me and shouted to him and told him, see? And when it got done with that, the Lord reproved me, and I told him I'm sorry that I even cut a little piece off his garment. I can live through that time. I didn't let myself do the thing that was wrong. When I did the thing that was wrong, and the Lord came and talked to me about it, I got serious about it. I begged for forgiveness and mercy until I got clear down to the bottom. And the Lord delivered me from it. And I was able to testify concerning it that my heart is right. Again, he purged me with hyssop, and he made me clean, and he made me whiter than the snow. He'd been through all of those things, and he had friends and enemies who'd also lived their lives. And you look back on it all, and this is what he said. I'm not among those that overlooked salvation. I also was upright before him, and I kept myself from mine iniquity. The word upright here really probably would be better translated perfect. And it doesn't mean in the sense that I never did anything wrong. It means in the sense that I set myself a life goal to serve the Lord, and I was perfect in maintaining that. I never let anything stop me from doing it. I just did it. And that's why I'm where I am, is what he said. Therefore hath the Lord recompensed me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanliness of my hands in his eyesight. Then he said these compelling words, with the merciful thou wilt show thyself merciful. With an upright man thou wilt show thyself upright. His message is that God's treatment of you and me is likely to be a mirror of our treatment of him. With the merciful, you show yourself merciful. Well, conversely, with the people that are not merciful, you might not show yourself so merciful. With the upright, but somebody that's not upright, you might show yourself not upright. Well, that sounds pretty strong, doesn't it? Then he goes on to say, with the pure, thou wilt show thyself pure, and with the froward, thou wilt show thyself froward. Froward's what I want to talk about today, by the Lord's help, and the topic of my little discourse is, don't overlook salvation. Don't overlook salvation. Froward. Well, a brief definition of froward would just be hard-headed or stubborn. Willful. One thing to be willful with the world and its people you know, and it's another thing to be stubborn with God. God takes note of whether we are merciful. That word stubborn means having or showing a dogged, which means rigid, just persistent determination not to change your views, attitude, or position on something, especially in spite of good arguments or reasons to do so. So here that means, here's what that means with serving the Lord. He is very gentle, just like the song. He's very compassionate. He comes in his mercy to deal with every one of us. And there isn't any good reason to reject the Lord. There isn't any good reason to harbor hardness in your heart towards somebody. There isn't any good reason to steal or hate or kill or fight. There's no good reason for that. There's no good reason when the Lord comes to check you and deal with you by his Spirit to tell you something's wrong. There's no good reason to persist in doing that. You remember Paul on the Damascus Road, and the Lord stopped him and shined a light down on him? He didn't hurt him, but he shined a light on him. He doesn't want to hurt you either. He doesn't want to hurt me, but he certainly wants to shine a light in our lives. And he spoke to him. When the Lord comes to speak to us, folks, that's a very valuable thing. We need to be ready to listen. I know a little of what that's like. Remember our son is in his room when he was a child, and called us up there, and his face was radiant, and his expression was joyful. And he said, the Lord spoke to me. And Roberta and I looked at each other and thought, that is an answer to prayer. That's what we've been calling on him for. I remember a man came to the altar one time, prayed to receive the Holy Spirit. And when he got done, he looked back and looked me in the face with the tears still on his cheeks and the smile splitting his lips on both sides. And he said, I feel so clean. He said, I feel large. Have you ever had the Lord speak to you? He doesn't speak to you generally intending to hurt you. He just shined a light on Paul and he spoke to him. But he said, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? Why are you doing what you're doing? And you know, Saul never answered that question. He said, who are you? But he never even tried to answer. And you and I can't answer that question either. Nobody ever has had an answer to give the Lord. Why you turn away from his gentle dealings? But people just, well, the word that froward means is just stubborn. Make up reasons where there are no reasons. Determined to justify themselves. Well, There's a scripture in Proverbs that says, it's in the 18th chapter, all the ways of a man are right, are clean in his own eyes, but the Lord weigheth the spirits. You see how we humans are? We look at our ways. Something comes along to condemn us, and we look at our ways. You know, you get a little overweight. You think about, what have I been eating lately? But the Lord looks on the heart. He looks not only on what we're doing, He looks on what's going on down in here. What makes us do what we do? He looks at the attitude. He looks at the emotions. If I'm getting a little overweight, He looks at the attitude I have about it that's likely to cause me to keep getting that way if I don't do something about it. You see, we human beings have, somehow or other, the strange power of blinding ourselves to our own behavior and what it means. And that's froward in the Lord's sight. The Lord's not like that. He weighs the spirits that's in people. We look at our ways, but God looks at us. Isn't that more important? And we, in doing that, we make terrible blunders in considering our own righteousness or whether or not our own behavior is what it ought to be. And we're apt to think, well, my conscience doesn't condemn me. I feel innocent about doing this. I've weighed my conscience and I feel clear. Folks, let me tell you something about conscience. Conscience tells us that we should do the right and we should avoid the wrong. That's what conscience does. It tells us, I'm repeating myself because it's important. Conscience tells us we should do the right and avoid the wrong, but it doesn't tell us what right and wrong is. We need something more to define conscience. If you say, my conscience doesn't condemn me, the natural question is, well, what is your conscience guided by? Because you can condition conscience. There have been people who have conditioned their conscience to do the most terrible things to other folks and feel justified in doing it. Say again, Saul is an example of that. The scribes and the Pharisees who were at Jerusalem were persecuting Christ, and they persecuted Stephen, and they persecuted others or the early believers. But Paul was the first who carried that persecution into foreign lands, and he extended it beyond the leaders that were in Jerusalem. He not only tried to get the Peters and the Jameses and the Johns, he went after women and children, and he put them in prison in every city, and he caused some of them to lose their lives, and he felt like he was really doing a good thing. His conscience justified him in what he was doing. Our conscience needs to be guided by common sense. There ought to be something in our conscience that when we look in somebody else's face and we're hurting them and the tears are running down their cheeks, there should be something in us, just common sense, that tells us this can't be God's way, no matter the justification, what there is. You know, there were people in the Middle Ages, leaders among religious groups, who got the idea that God has a peculiar pleasure in fire. That word's in the Bible a lot. And they had the opinion that He intends to purify His church by fire, and we're His agents to do that. And so they caught the people they thought were heretics and burned them at the stake, and they felt like they were doing God's work by doing that. It's a conscience that's not guided by common sense even. Common sense ought to tell you to take a 16-year-old girl and hasn't even developed her own understanding of life yet and set her on fire and burn her up because her parents believe something you didn't believe in. There's something wrong with that. Common sense is one thing. Good judgment, most of all, the Bible. We need the Bible to guide us about what right and wrong is. It's not enough just for our conscience to not condemn us. And there is this, too. Habits can cause you to overlook salvation. You can have the habit of having done something that's questionable for so long and just extend doing it over a period of time until after a while you can quietly do that and feel nothing at all and just think it's the right thing to do. And it actually be something that God in His heaven will hold you accountable for at the judgment. We need a power greater than ours to open our eyes. You know about temptation? You know what temptation is? There are people, there are times, perhaps when all of us, but there are temptations so strong, people want something wrong so much that the thing that's wrong, if they had to put their hand through the fire of hell to reach it, they'd just about do it rather than give up the temptation that's wrong. That's what the Bible is calling frowardness. Means being stubborn. Means being hard-headed. Not against me. But that'd be a small thing. It's different when it's against the Lord. So I'm thinking about these things today. The Lord said with a froward, he'd show himself froward. And we've got some examples of that in the Bible. I mentioned a term about the base word that I meant is having integrity, uprightness. With those that are not upright, you think God would show himself not upright? Well, in a manner of speaking, he will. I'm thinking of the rich man. Now, the Bible doesn't tell us how long God dealt with him, but I would like to think it was right down to the moment when he left this world. But when that time came, everything changed, and the dealing stopped. Well, there was a dealing, but it wasn't in the way that it had been before. Now the rich man is crying out for mercy. And he says, I'm tormented. And he said, now I see. And he said, I would love to change this, or I would love to have anybody, someone who was nothing but a beggar at my doorstep, I would love to have that person come and give me one more opportunity. And the Lord's answer is, you were froward with me. I dealt with you gently. I dealt with you tenderly. I could have hurt you, but I sent a light instead. I could have turned your road upside down, but instead I called to you with a gentle voice. Why are you doing what you're doing? You wouldn't listen. You insisted on kicking against the pricks anyway. Although there was no blessing in your life. Although you saw that the road you was going could not end well. You wouldn't stop. Rigid, determined, stubborn, unyielding. It's amazing the excuses that people will develop to do the things that they know they shouldn't be doing. I've heard folks say, maybe you have too. Oh, I know those old Christians down there, just a bunch of hypocrites, that's all they are. As if you found 20, supposing everyone in this room was a hypocrite today but you. Would that change the Bible? Would that change how you're going to deal with God at the judgment? Can any of that erase the hundreds and thousands and millions of lives that have been lived through the centuries to the standard of the word that God has blessed and poured out his spirit upon? Would that change any of that? If you got in a place where you didn't, there are people all around you singing Christian songs and you didn't believe one of them were saved, would that justify you to busily lose your own soul? How could it possibly? But the devil tells that to people. I know he does. Because he told my father that. And it caused my father to live unsaved. Through all my childhood years, my mother told me he's like a man that holds a penny up between him and the sun. And he says there's no sun up there because that this little bit of fault that I see in the religious people, it blots out all the light and the blessing and the victory that there is around it. You can't afford to go into eternity that way. None of us can. It's amazing the excuses that the devil puts in people's mind to cause them to justify doing things that they know are not right. So we get our lives, and we do what we want to do with them, and we either serve the Lord or we don't. David said, I serve the Lord. And he said, here's where I am. And now I'm old. I'm 67. I'm near the end of my life. When David's time came, in spite of all the troubles he'd had, he laid down in his own home with his own family around him and died peacefully, and nobody laid a hand on him. And that's the way he went out into the other world. And you and I may be able to do that too. Nobody, very few people in this world have the privilege of choosing the time and manner of their death. And you and I don't know what ours will be, but if we are faithful, we can have a confidence that the Lord will be with us when that time comes. One infidel spoke of his final moments, and he said, I'm taking a fearful leap into the dark. Stephen said, Lord, into thy hands I commend my spirit. Pretty easy. The rock's hitting him and beating the life out of him, looking up into heaven, and there he sees it. It's right there. It's more real than this world is, folks. So the Lord showed himself froward. You stubborn with me? Well, here, I'll show you stubborn. There's a great gulf fixed between you and me. Nobody goes into that other place that's ever coming back. Ever, ever, ever. I think of another mild instance in a way. Brother Roy Harmon told us, he'll never forget. His mother was a good woman. And she wasn't a saved woman. Brother Roy said, I had a dream one night after mother was gone, and I saw her. And she said, Roy, don't come to this place. There's nowhere to rest. And that's been years ago. And I think about it. How could you not? Still wandering. Still looking for anywhere, anywhere to just rest. Never found it. And never going to find it. Eternal. It's all I can do to wrap my mind about it. People that I love, knowing they're in pain. And there's nothing that anybody can do that's ever going to change it. It's forever that way. Don't overlook salvation. Look what he said in the song. Someday you may need him. He may not let you on. Someday it may be too late to pray. How awful if he should turn you away. And that's the moment, isn't it, that tells the whole story. It's why we meet here. It's why we worry about our conscience. It's why we think about life beyond that moment when you're right there before him and you have to face it. The absolute worst thing that could possibly happen is just happening to me. Since I was a child, I've always had, there's got to be a way out of the most terrible situation. Somebody's got to care. We're born expecting our parents to take care of us. Every newborn needs somebody to feed them and care for them and put them to sleep. And it's deep in us all. We're all the children of a heavenly creator. Being in a place where there is no help. This is it. You have entered the worst possible place a human being can enter into. To hear him turn you away. Thou in thy lifetime were stubborn. You did what you wanted to do. You followed your feelings. You allowed yourself to think ill of others. You allowed yourself to be lied to by the devil. You put your emotions and feelings and passions ahead of the things that you knew were right. You allowed your conscience to be misguided. I came down and talked to you. Over and over, I dealt with you in the nighttime when nobody was there. You know the secret tears that you've had. I dealt with you through the word. I dealt with you through the lives of others. I came to you in the young years and the later years and all along your life. And every time, it's like an old mule. Find a way to turn me down. Well, now I'm turning you down. And there's not any way. And there's never going to be any way again. To have the Lord show himself froward with you. Stubborn. Resisting. The mercy's all run out now. And there's no hope anymore. And there's no chance anymore. And what you've got, the suffering that you're entering into, you're never, ever going to get out of it. It overwhelms my mind. It's more than I can take in. Am I reaching you? You hearing me? I don't know that I have a more solemn message in my lifetime than this. To do what we can to help souls not to be lost. And it's burning my soul. And it weighs on my spirit. And I wake up in the night and can't get over it. Because I know in the spirit that there are people right here this morning that if you don't do something about your soul, you're headed down a road that's going to go to that place. I don't think Saul had to repent. I think he had a choice. I think you do too. I think all of us do. And I know it's the same this way. It's a gentle voice. I know the voice of sin in the world is always louder than the voice that calls to righteousness and truth. It's easy to blot it out. But I want to tell you, in the fear of the Lord, this has an end, folks. I don't know how to say it more plainly than that. This has an end. There are people right here this morning, if you don't do something about it, you're going to lose your soul at the judgment. Now, my perception for this is not from watching anybody's life. It's from the times the Lord's come by. And I see your faces and it haunts my mind. And I ask you, what more can we do? I'm so afraid. Somebody's not going to make it. I don't want to stand there and say, I wish we'd done something more. Lord, help us today. If you're here this morning and you got something between you and Jesus, I ought to read you the last of that verse. He's got an answer for it. And I want us all to have it, and I hope you do too. Thou wilt light my candle. The Lord will enlighten my darkness. We need a light. We need a light from heaven, a guide for our conscience that lets us know it's not only that we listen to it, but that it's a one that pleases the Lord. The light he's talking about for this candle, it comes right off the altar. The Lord lit that fire. Remember, he sent his fire down from heaven and kindled the fire on the sacrifice. And that is the light that we're to use to light our candle. And our candle, each one of us, we need our own candle, our own guide in life, our own individual contact with our eternal Creator, our own assurance that our soul is clear, we're forgiven, walking in his mercy, able to meet him in peace. My God will enlighten my darkness. Now that's his availability. I feel weak. I feel unable. I don't know how to make it any more clear than that. And I know I should. I want to remind you how dangerous it is not to listen to the voice of the Lord. And let's stand and have a song.